any coal in the stove, and you freeze in the winter, and you curse to the wind with your face when you haven't any shoes.
Good evening, and welcome to It's the Economy, KGNU's weekly show about our national and world economy. I'm your host, Jim Banks, and tonight we are going to discuss Amendment 69, Colorado CARE, an amendment to provide health care for all Coloradans. We're going to begin by talking to Emily Johnson. Emily is a principal researcher at the Colorado Health Institute. They are a nonpartisan group and take no position on Amendment 69. Emily, welcome to KGNU.
Thanks so much for having me.
So, Emily, as you've looked thoroughly at Amendment 69, what did you learn and what did you discover?
Well, we found that Colorado CARE would in fact create billions of dollars in savings through administrative savings, and that would allow it to cover all of the currently uninsured Coloradans at around the same amount of money, actually a little bit less than is currently spent on healthcare in the state for that same group. And that would allow Colorado to become the first state in the U.S. with universal healthcare coverage. That's the cost side, but a problem kind of comes in when we start looking at the revenue. So what we found is that projected funding wouldn't actually cover those costs. And without future tax increases, this would lead to a small deficit the first year and a larger deficit over the next decade. The reason for that is because the majority of the funding comes from a new 10% income tax that would be introduced in the state of Colorado. And income taxes just don't grow as quickly as healthcare spending. And this is a problem that the current system faces as well. Healthcare spending grows at a much faster rate than other parts of the economy.
Now, would there be a way to keep that spending down?
There could be. So a lot of the details of Colorado CARE would be decided upon by a 21-person board who would administer many aspects of Colorado CARE, including what services are covered, to what extent that they're covered. But we really haven't been able to see anything really solid yet that would tell us that they'd be able to keep those costs down. Although I should say that the rate of growth looks like it would be a little bit slower under Colorado CARE than it is under the current system. It just wouldn't be slow enough to allow that income tax to keep up with it every year. Okay. Now, I should say that the income tax could be raised. So there is a provision in the amendment that would allow Coloradans to vote on an increase in the income tax every year. And so that's one way that they could theoretically address
and
this
that,
problem.
That income tax increase would go to Colorado.
Correct.
The amendment.
Okay. Yes.
Okay.
Exactly.
So continue. What else did you learn about this?
And
that's obviously a big issue. If there's going to be a big deficit after 3 or 4 years, that's an issue.
Yeah, it's a big deficit after 3 or 4 years, and it kind of continues at least for the first 10 years that we looked at this. And it's really just a problem that we find is the same problem that the current system is facing. The big difference, though, is that when a private insurer is running into a problem where they can't necessarily, their costs are maybe higher than they expected, they're able to raise premiums without going to a vote of the people. Colorado CARE, on the other hand, would have to go to the vote of the people. And if people didn't vote for that tax increase, they could find that they're in some financial trouble.
Okay. Tell us some of the strengths of the amendment. What did you find? You said it would basically break even the first year, or it would reduce costs?
Yeah, so it would reduce costs. So the amount of money that is spent to cover Coloradans would actually be a little bit lower than what is currently spent. And also all Coloradans would then be insured. Currently, we have an uninsurance rate in the state of around 6.7%, which is around 350,000 people.
And that's with Obamacare.
That's with Obamacare. Okay. And so all of those people would have coverage. And as a state, we would be spending around the same amount of money and actually, as you said, a little bit less. Okay. When we talk about a deficit, what we're really talking about is, currently the system's able to raise more money through premiums and through state and federal funds than it would be able to raise under Colorado CARE. And so we do see a deficit in the first year of what we estimate to be around $253 million, which might sound like a lot of money. It is worth remembering, though, that that's less than 1% of what ColoradoCare's budget would be. But unfortunately, that number would continue to grow every year unless some of these major changes, such as increasing the tax rate or, cutting provider payments or reducing benefits or something like that were introduced instead.
What would happen to Medicare and Medicaid in Colorado if this passes?
That's an excellent question. So Medicare, as well as other federally run programs like the Veterans Administration or TRICARE, which is the private insurance plan for military families, they would actually remain. So folks who are enrolled in those programs would still stay on those programs, although parts of their income might still be subjected to this new tax that were introduced. Parts of Social Security income and retirement income, some of that would be exempt. But they could find themselves paying a little bit while also still being on one of these federal programs. Medicaid, which is a state program, the state of Colorado would apply to the federal government for something called a Medicaid demonstration waiver, where they could basically say to the federal government, hi, we're providing the exact same level of care to the exact same number of people or even more that we were providing care to before. So we want to continue to get our funding as a state for Medicaid. And the federal government could decide whether or not to grant that waiver. And in our analysis, we think that the state would likely gather the majority of the funds that the federal government has traditionally given Colorado for Medicaid, although there will still be some areas of funding that the state might not receive. So Medicaid would essentially go away. But the money coming in, a lot of the money coming in from the federal government that funds Medicaid in the state would continue to come in.
So that would be a source of income then?
Correct, yes. Okay. Exactly, yeah.
And would people be able to still get private insurance if they wanted it, or would that be ruled out?
Oh, absolutely. There would still be a private insurance market under ColoradoCare. We tried to model around what percentage of people we think might go into that private insurance market based on what we've seen happen in other countries with large, universal public insurance programs. And it's a corollary that we've referred to a lot is sort of like public and private schools. Everybody pays the taxes that go towards funding public schools in the state of Colorado, but there are still individuals who choose to send their children to private schools. And we think that, kind of a similar phenomenon might happen with ColoradoCare, where whether it's because there's a different set of doctors that's on a given plan or because, an out-of-state employer continues to offer it to their employees in-state, or just any variety of reasons, there could still be a small, much smaller, but still could be a private insurance market in Colorado.
But those people would still have to pay the tax.
Correct, yes. So you're not necessarily exempt from the tax.
And what would happen to administrative costs if this passed? You said they would go down. They would go down.
Yeah, exactly. So we do find a slowdown in administrative costs. What our findings were is that there would be some administrative savings, for example, with local hospitals. So when currently a insurer negotiates a price with a hospital, that hospital is negotiating with 10 or so insurers, and so it can kind of negotiate higher prices. If they're negotiating with one insurer that has the majority of the market, it won't be as easy for them to charge higher prices. We also think that there will be some simplifications when it comes to how people bill for insurance, and so that'll kind of allow providers and ColoradoCare as the new insurer to save a little bit of money. What we don't think is that there will be savings on things like pharmaceuticals or medical devices. This is actually a place that our analysis differed from the proponent's analysis.
And why would that be?
Well, those are sold at a national level. So a pharmaceutical company like Pfizer operates at a national or multinational level. ColoradoCare would have around 4.3 million members, which is a lot of people. But when you compare it to some of these larger insurance plans like Cigna that, insure tens of millions of people, we just don't think it would have any additional leverage when it comes to dealing with those larger sort of national or multinational organizations. Hospitals operate at a more local market. You have to be physically close to the hospital you're going to. So that's kind of a different story. But we think that with some of these other things, there just wouldn't really be an opportunity for savings there.
And how about out-of-pocket costs? Would people still have to pay a copay? Would they have to pay anything or what?
So they will have to pay something. In the amendment, Colorado does get rid of the deductible, which is the amount of money that you have to pay as the insured person before your insurance kicks in. So there is no deductible under Colorado Care, but there could still be copays. The exact level of the copay isn't something that's written into the amendment. That's another thing that that 21-person governing board would decide sort of after the election. And something that they could change as they needed to. In our analysis, we assumed that on average, out-of-pocket costs would be about the same as they are under the current system. And that's how we addressed that. But they could be higher. They could be lower. You know, that's definitely one thing that could
and,
be
and out-of-pocket costs would be like what? If there's no deductible, what would just be a copay?
Copays, yeah, exactly. Okay. Things like that.
And once a lot more people start using the health services, how will that affect everything? Will the expenses rise if it's really hot and people are using it, or will they go down or stay the same?
So we think that they would rise, I mean, a bit. Well, first of all, you have this 6.7% of the population, these 350,000 Coloradans who currently don't have insurance. And while they do, you know, still use some healthcare services, we predicted that they would use a lot more once they got insurance. And also the people who are currently insured, once that deductible goes away, we also hypothesize that their usage of healthcare would increase because there's no longer that initial barrier of having to hit a $500 deductible or something before you go see the doctor. Mm-hmm. So we do think that utilization of healthcare services would go up under Colorado Care, but that would mostly be offset by those administrative savings that we were talking about earlier.
Okay. So my sense is, talking to you, that it could work, except for the deficits. Is there any way that the program itself or the amendment itself could be changed to deal with that? Or could the 21-member board somehow deal with that? What could the proponents of this amendment do to address the deficit issues that you've discovered?
Yeah, absolutely. So there are some things that the 21-member board could do to address these deficits. One is cutting the amount of money that's currently paid to providers, you know, doctors, hospitals, to provide the services that they offer. That's not something that, you know, the campaign has really wanted to do, you know, is cut provider rates. But that's one option. Another option is, you know, raising the amount of those copayments. So the more people pay in copayments, obviously the less money that Colorado Care itself would have to spend on any given medical service. There's always the chance they could get more federal funding than we think that they're going to get. You know, so we were talking about Medicaid earlier, and I mentioned how the federal Medicaid money, you know, we think that the state will get most of it, but not all of it. They might get all of it. And the other option is that there is a provision in the Colorado Care Amendment that says if the finances don't work out, Colorado Care, you know, would shut down and things would kind of go back to the way they the current system. So those are sort of the options, the levers that the Colorado Care team has to address this.
And my guess would be, though, if it shut down, the transition back would be a difficult one, too. I mean, I suppose transitioning into Amendment 69 would be difficult. And transitioning out of it, if they had to, would also be a difficult process.
I would imagine. But,
okay. Yeah. Well, we are just about at time with you. Thank you. But do you have anything else to say? Anything else that we missed? Anything else that would really help our listeners know about how to vote on this?
I guess the last thing I would really want to underscore, because I think it's sometimes been overlooked in some of the debate we've heard around this, is that these rising healthcare costs are still also plaguing the current healthcare system. You know, this is not a problem that Colorado Care invented, or, you know, this is a problem everywhere. And the question is really just, what can we do as a state to make it so that our healthcare costs are more under control than they historically have been?
Okay, Emily, thank you very much.
Thank
for your
you
time.
So much.
We really appreciate it. And now we're going to transition to a debate about this issue. I'm going to turn that mic off for a second, and we're going to bring some other people in who are here. So bear with us for 1 second. Why don't you sit right here? We have Ivan Miller and Dave Sabatos. They're from Colorado Care's Yes. an organization in favor of Amendment 69. And gentlemen, you can put your headphones on there and just speak into the mic, and I'll let you know if it's sounding okay. And then on the telephone, we're going to have Linda Gorman from the Independence Institute, and they are a group opposed to the passage of Amendment 69. Linda, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Great. Well, welcome. And so I want to welcome Ivan, Dave, and Linda all to KGNU.
Thank you.
So why don't we start with Ivan and Dave. Why do you support the passage of Amendment 69? What leads you looking at everything to say, yeah, let's do this?
Oh, well, it's quite simply that it's going to cover everybody. It's going to save billions of dollars. And it's economically feasible, and that's what we'll be talking about tonight.
Okay, so you think it's economically feasible?
Absolutely.
Okay. What do you think?
Absolutely. I think right now in our state, we have over 500 people dying every year because they have no insurance at all, and thousands more because the insurance they have is practically useless.
Okay. And Linda, what is your kind of initial thoughts on why this amendment should not pass?
Because systems like this are failing around the world. It's going to raise taxes by enormous amounts to start, and it puts in sort of government entity that just invites corruption and crony capitalism. And I can't say that I think the health care is going to be very good either.
Now, let me ask you a quick question, Linda. You say these systems are failing around the world. What systems do you mean, and how are they failing?
Colorado Care is modeled after the Canadian system in that it imposes centrally planned price controls on every licensed provider in the state. They will be unable to take payment at any price other than that set by Colorado Care. That's similar to the Canadian system. The Canadian system is suffering from big deficits, huge shortages of medical care. It's also similar to the national health system in Britain, which is, again, suffering huge deficits and rapidly declining medical care. So I have a very different view of how things are going in the rest of the world than the people who support Colorado Care.
Okay, so thank you for the three of you sort of for some initial comments. So Dave and Ivan, go into a little bit more detail. Did you hear the segment with Linda earlier?
Yeah,
with Emily.
Yeah. Do I have, 5, 10 minutes to respond?
Why don't you take 5 minutes and give an initial sort of fuller statement?
Okay. Well, before I address some of the things that Linda said, I would like to talk just a little bit about the economic history of Colorado Care. Actually, it was back in 2007 that Governor Ritter, who's now working on the opposition, he commissioned this 208 Commission to study various designs for the health care systems. And there was only one system that would cover everyone and save money. And it was back then, it was called the single-payer system. And Senator Aguilar was on that commission. I submitted plans, and Senator Aguilar thought, well, this is the one that works. They'll choose it. Well, no. They said, no, can't have that. So every industrialized country in the world does do it, and they're not failing. Study, you know, economists don't just have opinions. Some of them research, and they've researched, you know, the outcomes in these other countries, and it's equal to or better than the United States. So we decided to work on this 8 years ago, and the first thing we did is we got Dr. William Hsiao, who's a Harvard economist, who's considered one of the best healthcare economists in the world. And what's interesting about him is he's designed systems in 24 countries, and he does economic modeling. But he doesn't just do the modeling. They implement the systems that he's designed, and you can see how they turn out. So he's got the experience of saying, this is how I think it'll work, and seeing how it turns out. He looked at our plan, and he said, this is good to go. So after that, we got Dr. Jerry Friedman to come in. And he's an Amherst healthcare economist who's analyzed many state plans. And he came in and said that, yeah, this is going to work. And that was a 2013 study. since then, it's been updated. And we came up with, I did the updating work. And I've also worked for the last 8 years with, because it was legislation, we could work with legislative council attorneys. Now, these guys and women are the best, some of the best constitutional law attorneys in the state, because they have to write legislation that complies with the Constitution. So we put in Colorado Care some paragraphs to guarantee revenue. Now we have two big differences with the CHI study. A lot of what Emily said was good and accurate, and we can discuss that. In fact, I've had many discussions with them. We're professionals. We sit down and talk over our differences of opinion. So I know where they differ from us. Basically, the reason they came out with Colorado Care not having money is they ignored four important revenue paragraphs in the amendment. And essentially, I mean, if you look at an amendment, you take out four paragraphs, it's not Amendment 69. And they're revenue paragraphs. So if you put them back in, then Colorado Care actually has a $2 billion surplus. And let me
delineate. What are those four paragraphs?
Yeah, okay. Let me first say one of the things that is kind of behind the scenes here, and I wish Emily were in here, because I'm sure she'd agree, that what they, CHI, did is they found a glitch in the hospital provider fee statutes that said, oh, because of this glitch, you're not going to have money. And then there's a cascade of events that the hospital provider fee won't be collected, so you won't have that money. You won't have money for the federal match, so you lose, essentially $2.3 billion that we would count on. Now, the four, and part of what they said we'd lose is CHIP Plus, the Children's Health Program Plus, and Medicaid expansion. The two big programs that the federal government's promoting, they said we wouldn't get waivers for because of this cascade of events. Okay, the first paragraph says that no later than Colorado Care assumes responsibility, the state shall transfer to Colorado Care all state and federal funds for Medicaid, Children's Basic Health Plan, and other programs. It specifically says you can't take these programs out. The next important paragraph, this is Section 12, it says, to ensure the state's expenditures, that the General Assembly shall write legislation to ensure the state's expenditures on health care services, including maintaining the matching funds for Medicaid and federally supported health care programs, do not fall below the previous year. Well, CHI said, the glitch in the hospital provider fee, you don't get that money. They can't just say that. The amendment says that you can't do that. The third paragraph, and this is the important one, and this is like every amendment. We sit down with the attorneys and say, what do we do if there's a glitch in a statute or something? And they say, you put in a paragraph about enabling legislation. So the paragraph says, the General Assembly shall write legislation to implement this, meaning any legislation that's needed, it can implement. So when there's a glitch in a statute, amendments, can I say Trump?
Sure, you can.
Okay, Trump the statute. The it's not the other way around. Like, if we could stop an amendment by saying, we found a glitch in the statute over here that conflicts with your amendment, we'll throw the amendment out into the Constitution. Now, nobody's ever heard of that. And the fourth important paragraph is it says that before Colorado Care opens, we call this the guarantee clause. The feds, when they give waivers, they say, do an actuarial study. They say how much the waivers will be. So the trustees don't do the day-to-day operation. This is a business run by CEOs, CFOs, and CMOs, but it's a cooperative business. So the trustees have to make a decision, is this financially viable? And the guarantee is, if it's not, they'll return the money they have to the taxpayers and shut it down. So the whole idea that it would start in the red doesn't make sense. Now, the second big thing that in addition to the CHI analysis on the real Amendment 69, not the one without those four paragraphs, would have a $2 billion surplus. But the other thing, and Emily referred to this a little bit, that perhaps Colorado Care could slow costs, the growth of health care costs. Well, even the opponents agree, and they say it could slow health care costs 0.5% a year, which would take from about, starting out with a $1 billion savings, at the end of 10 years, it's almost $6 billion, or it's over $6 billion. And because of that, it's many years before there needs to be a small any request for increased revenue, and by that time insurance rates are going to be 20 or 30% higher. So it's really sound, and if you really look at the CHI analysis and you really apply it to the amendment language, it's farther support. So we see that as confirmation. And the other things that Emily talked about, yes, it does cover everybody. Isn't that cool? I mean, that's what we need. People are suffering, and it makes things easier. Everybody's heard their doctors complain about the hassles of insurance company, and everybody who has a health care story says, oh, I got the best care, but you wouldn't believe what happened with the insurance company.
Thank you very much for that. Now, Linda, I'm going to have you respond, and if you could take some of his specific points and respond to them about why you disagree or why you think the whole thing isn't going to work.
Well, the only thing he talked about was the CHI modeling. I've read the CHI study. Look, I don't put a whole lot of faith in this kind of modeling because it's usually wrong. If you recall, we did models on how much Medicaid would expand in this state. They got the Harvard economists, they got the usual experts, and they were off by 100%. They thought Medicaid enrollment was at 700,000. It's now 1.3 million. In any healthcare modeling that we have ever done, the costs far, far exceed even the most pessimistic looks. So I think if I were a taxpayer in Colorado, looking to vote on this, I would simply say, oh, CHI was very, by the way, favorable to Colorado Care estimates about administrative costs. They got them from WHO. Says these guys are going to run a deficit. That means that our taxes are going to have to go up even further. And this amendment increases the Colorado state income tax rate to 14.63% to start with. It increases the payroll tax by 10%. That means that people who are on Medicaid now, and these are low-income people trying to make it in life, and they might have a part-time job, their wages are going to be docked by 10%, even though they're currently getting free health care from Medicaid. So this is a measure that, for some reason, is going out to harm poor people. And we know why they're going out to harm poor people. They have to get the tax revenue from somewhere, and they have to tax as broad a base as possible. The other group that's going to be taxed that's not going to like it are Medicare beneficiaries. If they work part-time, they, too, will be paying that payroll tax. The rest of us are going to be paying additional 10% tax on interest, dividends, business income, and everything else. This is going to have a bad, bad effect on employment in this state as people cut marginal workers from their roles. And it's going to cause a major exodus of people who pay taxes in this state, just like it has from Illinois and California and New York. So it has very bad implications for health, now for the health of the state's economy. Now, the usual comeback to this is something like, yeah, but we won't be paying all those health care premiums, right? Well, the fact is that for health care, you have to have people voluntarily provide it. And in order to get people to voluntarily provide health care, you have to pay them and create working conditions that they like. Otherwise, they're all smart people. They can all go off and do something else. And the problem with this amendment is it creates a centralized bureaucracy that's not accountable to anyone to determine health care reimbursement and ultimately, therefore, health care working conditions. And the best example we have for this kind of thing is Medicaid, which doctors are fleeing in droves because reimbursement is so low. and which the rules are so insane in Medicaid that I was just talking to a woman who was seeing a Medicaid patient, and the guy came in and said, oh, I think I have a kidney infection. He was in intense pain. He had driven an hour to get there because they were in a rural area, and she wanted to send him down to her colleagues and just have a scan and see if, you know, he in fact had kidney stones or what he had. But he was on Medicaid, and so she couldn't just refer him. She had to have him go in through the emergency room because that's the only way you could order a scan in Medicaid. So the cost of compliance with this big bureaucratic system is going to be huge, and that's not something that people who support Colorado Care usually talk about. So that's one thing. One thing is the huge taxes, which are going to, you know, kill employment and tax revenues to the state. Second is we have this board that's not accountable to anybody. There's no oversight by the state. It sets up its own election rules. It sets up its own certification of who's won the election. You don't have to be a registered voter to vote. You just have to be a resident of the state. You don't have to be a U.S. citizen. They can accept grants, gifts, and donations from anyone. This is an open invitation for an entity that controls over $30 billion a year to engage in some of the most reprehensible crony capitalism we've ever seen. If Colorado Care supporters had wanted this entity to be responsible, it would have put it within state government in the existing structure and said, okay, we're just going to raise taxes, and you use those taxes for health care. So the real question for people who care about clean government is, why didn't Colorado Care supporters do that? And finally, I was on the 208 Commission, and I would say that we didn't pick single-payer care because there are a number of problems with it, which pretty much everybody who's come out against Colorado Care understands. So I think it's best not to do historical revisionism about the 208 Commission.
Linda, thank you very much. That was a very articulate presentation of your position, and we obviously have a good debate going. For our listeners, if you have any questions for the pro or con side, for Linda or Ivan or Dave, please give us a call at 303-442-4242. So, Dave, we haven't heard from you yet. How would you respond to some of the points that Linda made?
That may be the only time I've heard someone from the Independence Institute say they'd rather trust government than an independent elected entity, actually. I kind of had to laugh a little. There's a number of things in those concerns that are just outright odd. The concept that physicians would flee our state is completely unfounded. Last time I was traveling, and friends who may travel internationally, I'm pretty sure we still have physicians in Canada, France, the UK, Germany, and every other industrialized country in the world that's created a universal healthcare system. And those physicians certainly haven't fled to America to take part in the insurance industry here. Second, the point of that 10% tax increase, this is the talking point we hear repeated over and over from the opposition. And the reality is it's a 3.33% tax on all W-2 employees. So anyone who has your standard job where you're picking up part of your health insurance and your employer's picking up part of your health insurance, the tax increase is 3.33% with the employer kicking in 6.67%. And what we've seen is for the employer, for the business, over 80% of those will actually be paying less than they are paying right now if they're providing health insurance for their employees. The average rate for a business is paying something in the neighborhood of about 14% right now for their share of their employees' health care. And it's certainly less for most employees as well.
Ivan,
can I respond?
How would you respond? Yeah, go ahead, Linda.
On the payroll tax, look, most economic researchers have settled saying that the incidence of a payroll tax falls on the employee. You can collect the 6.66% from the employer, but he's got to get the money somewhere. And in a very competitive industry, he can't just raise his prices. So what he's got to do is pay lower wages. If you look at the Massachusetts data, it's very clear that the mandated insurance payments came out of people's wages. So when you talk about payroll taxes, that 10% comes out of your fringe benefits, it comes out of your wages, or it comes out of the number of hours you could work, but it always falls on the worker. And secondly, small businesses, as I'm sure you know, are exempt from the Obamacare requirements, so a lot of them do not provide health care for their employees, those employees by individual plans or through the exchange or on Medicaid. And so, therefore, the businesses aren't saving any money in this case. They're just having to pay higher payroll costs.
Ivan, before we get to you, we have a caller on the line, and I think the lines are going to... So let's take a few calls, and then we'll let you respond. We have Joe from Gun Barrel. Joe, what is your comment or question for our guests?
Well, I appreciated Ms. Gorman's mention of crony capitalism, and I wondered if the guests could sort of compare and contrast levels of crony capitalism that are presented, currently, and in the event of the passage of Amendment 69.
Okay, Ivan, why don't you go first? Would Amendment 69 reduce the level of crony capitalism in the already existing system, or would it be just the same?
I think that it would be a lot lower. Actually, one of the things Senator Aguilar says is that her experience in the legislature, when she first went in the legislature, she wondered why it took them so long to pass Obamacare. After she was there for 2 months, she said, oh my gosh, how can they pass anything? there's so much money and everything in politics is so partisan and so hidden behind partisan politics. The 21-member board, we have to remember, replaces the insurance industry. The insurance industry, on the average, has an 11-member board setting rates. They're three times as big, and they operate in secrecy. Colorado Care's got to be transparent. It's got to have annual audits to the public. It's got an outside ombudsperson for patients and another one for providers. It has more accountability than any other program that's been set up. It's run like a cooperative business. It's owned by the members. So the people who are the trustees, they're elected. It's going to be patients and providers of Colorado. It really is good for the... It's an amendment from the average people. We put it together. It's small businessmen and providers and patients that put this together. Our number one donor is small businesses. They think this is great. They can't get decent health care. That by far and away... And providers is next. The opposition's number one donor, they call themselves Coloradans for Coloradans. They get 99% of their money from giant corporations outside the state. We have a nickname. We call them corporations for corporations. And that's what the alternative is, the insurance industry or Colorado Care, and that's the choice.
Linda, do you think passage of Amendment 69 would just substitute one crony capitalist bureaucracy for another, or would
Absolutely.
It be worse or better?
Well, first of all, let me clear up a misunderstanding about the Colorado Care Ombudsman. These are people that the amendment says must be placed in the Department of Insurance, and there's one to accept provider complaints and one to accept individual complaints. And this makes it sound like the Department of Insurance has some power over Colorado Care. In fact, it has absolutely no power, and all these ombudsmen can do is make recommendations. So this is basically window dressing. You're encouraged to send your complaints to the emperor, but it's not going to be heard. So there are no controls over Colorado Care's behavior. As far as the audits go, it hires its own auditor. It's not like you have the state office of the auditor come in and audit this. It's not going to happen. So they hire a crony capitalist compliant auditor, and you get a very rosy picture. That's sort of what's going on with the state health exchange already. And we can give examples of crony capitalism that's come from that. They hire friendly IT agencies. Somebody on the board knows somebody that's a friend. They send navigator payments to friendly community organizations, and their costs are very high. The same thing will happen with ColoradoCare. And the reason is that absolute power corrupts absolutely. And it's very difficult to cut costs. And even though the insurance market is consolidating a great deal, there's still some pressure on the insurers to cut costs. And what we've seen from Obamacare is that it's made this consolidation and crony capitalism much, much worse. So what we should really be doing is getting rid of the Obamacare problems and going back to a system in which patients control the money. And if somebody needs money for health care, then you subsidize them. And there's a bill in Congress, actually, that goes quite a ways towards doing this. And then you have individuals who are paying attention to pricing, keeping track of the insurers, keeping track of the physicians, and making sure they get good value for their money. And we see this happening in the Medicaid program already when individuals are given control of their budgets. Colorado has had for 20 years a program called the CDAS program, and it's for people who are disabled, they're in wheelchairs, they need home care, and et cetera. And the state gives them a choice. You can either take the massive care that state Medicaid gives you, which would be similar to the care that, you know, similar organization as ColoradoCare, or we'll let you have your money that we would have spent on you anyway. We'll subtract 5% for a management fee to make sure nobody's stealing this blind. And you can spend the money however you want for your own home care. And what happens is that people can hire other people for less. They could get more care for the money, and they are much, much happier. They say they stay out of the hospital more and so forth. So that program has been a stunning success, and that's the way we should go. Instead, Amendment 69 says, let's apply Medicaid to the entire state. So I don't think that's a good idea.
Caller, do you have any other questions or comments or responses to that?
We're bored.
Maybe. Yeah, well, maybe we lost him. So let's see. I think we're on to Kathy from Denver. Let's take one more call. Kathy from Denver, do you have any comments or questions?
I have a question.
Yes, please.
Is it safe to, this is for the folks that are pro-Amendment 69. When people are calculating their savings, can they calculate the fact that perhaps they won't have to pay workman's comp or they won't have to pay the medical portion of their car insurance in what they may save?
It's the employer that'll save on the workers' comp. The patient gets the advantage of, or the employee gets the advantage of, they can go to their regular doctor when they're injured. They don't have to go to two different doctors. And on the auto insurance, there is some money that's saved. It's very complicated. It's not huge. So we decided not to boast about it. But yes, the cost medical part of auto insurance would go down.
Linda, do you agree with that? Thank you, Carla.
The amendment does not speak at all to auto insurance, so it'll be whatever the companies determine is the cost of medical care. As for workers' comp, the medical portion of workers' comp will be taken over by ColoradoCare, and presumably ColoradoCare will treat it as a straightforward any other kind of medical expense. The problem with that is that's likely to raise expenditures because workman's comp is a deal between employers and employees, and workman's comp has a lot of fraud in it, which is sort of vigorously prosecuted. It's not clear that these same anti-fraud units would exist under ColoradoCare.
Okay, thank you for your call. And Dave, you had a question or a comment you were going to make a little earlier.
Oh, I was just interested when our opposition here said about, you know, the answer is repealing Obamacare. I'm actually just amazed, you know, anyone would want to be going back to a system where insurance companies had complete free rein to deny people on pre-existing conditions and otherwise maximize their profits to you know, throw sick people off their rolls only to maximize, you know, how much their CEOs are making.
Linda, go ahead briefly. We have more callers. Yes. What were you saying?
We had something called Cover Colorado before Obamacare, which was guaranteed issue for anyone who couldn't get insurance. So, A, it's not true that people couldn't get insurance. B, in terms of throwing people off the rolls when they got sick, every individual policy in Colorado had a clause in it that said the company could not cancel your policy unless you committed fraud or you didn't pay your premiums, or you lied on your application. So I think it would be a good time to stop misrepresenting the status of the U.S. healthcare system before Obamacare.
But Linda, just to be fair, we all know that the rescission policies really, when it came down to it, had nothing to do with fraud or anything like that. It was just simply they didn't want to pay. But we'll get back to that. We have Ron from Longmont. Ron from Longmont, go ahead. What is your comment or question? Are you there, Ron? Turn your radio down, Ron. We're ready for you. Okay. Well, we'll try to get Ron a little bit later. So, Linda, go ahead. You say that it wasn't true that rescission was not for fraud.
No, I said if you committed fraud on your application, they could cancel your policy.
But they were canceling policies for things other than fraud too.
If you didn't pay your premium, did you ever have individual insurance?
I'm sorry. Did I ever have what?
Individual insurance prior to Obamacare.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So you read the contract.
Yeah,
but
my point is that in practice, that's not what happened.
If in fact that was happening, then the Division of Insurance was not doing its job because it was in state law that couldn't be done in Colorado.
Sure, and fairly, they would not be doing their job. We do have Ron back from Longmont. Ron, what is your comment or question?
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking the call.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you. First thing, I do have a quick comment. She said we had covered Colorado, and of course I'm an insurance agent, and we all know covered Colorado is pretty much useless because, yeah, it said that people could buy insurance, but nobody could afford it at those prices. But my main comment or question is this, is that, inside our country, we have medical bankruptcies. We have bankruptcies. 60% of all bankruptcies are medical bill related. Seems to me we wouldn't have that problem, and where that problem gets worse is that with bankruptcies, that means people aren't getting paid, hospitals, clinics, and doctors. So they raise their prices. Well, because they raise their prices, insurance companies raise their prices. And so what happens is it starts spiraling, and we have more and more uninsured and underinsured, meaning people who buy insurance but they can't even afford the deductible, which creates more bankruptcies. So my question is, what is their solution to stopping this spiraling of prices if we don't do something like Colorado Care? Because under Colorado Care, at least all the doctors, all the hospitals, everybody gets paid every single time.
Linda, we'll start with you and then we'll go to Ivan because he directed it to you. How would you respond to that?
Well, to start with, everybody gets paid every single time, but if they get paid too little, then they're not making any money. And Medicare probably pays 90% of costs right now. Medicaid pays 50% of costs right now. So if Colorado Care doesn't increase both payment levels, which is something that CHI looked at and one of the reasons it runs the deficit, then we're not going to be replacing capital and costs are, going to continue to rise. It's just you're not going to be paying for it. Medical bankruptcy exists in other countries. It just takes a different form in the sense that people will mortgage their house in order to avoid the waiting lists in places like England and Canada. The medical bankruptcy in the United States is extremely misleading. It's been done by basically Himmelfarb and Woolhandler, who are two people who are absolutely in favor of government-run healthcare and single-payer system. And their definition of medical bankruptcy is any bankruptcy that was associated with the birth of a child within a year, anyone who has gambling debts, because, of course, gambling is a mental health condition, and anyone who, has missed his utility payments and so forth for a couple of weeks. So they define.
Linda, you're spinning off there a little bit. Be a little more specific.
Specific about the definition of medical bankruptcy?
Yeah, I think you're spinning off a little bit. Ron
okay.
from Longmont,
well,
he was saying, how do we address the spiral of costs going up, bankruptcies causing more costs?
Okay, the biggest problem in cost spiral in U.S. healthcare is government regulation. We have regulation upon regulation. They don't help patient care. One of the things that we should do is look at regulation. The second biggest problem in U.S. healthcare is we have too much third-party payment, and Colorado Care would just make that worse. We know that the amount of health care that somebody demands goes up by about 30% when they get free care. This was determined by the RAND healthcare experiment, one of the best social science experiments ever done. We've seen that vindicated again when they did the Oregon Medicaid experiment, and we've seen it in consumer-directed health plans. The minute you provide free care, expenditures go up by 30%. So,
okay, let's switch to Ivan real quick here, because we have more callers, Linda.
Okay,
go ahead and finish quickly, Linda.
Done.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead, Ivan.
I have to kind of smile when economists talk about how people don't really have medical debt or bankruptcy. I mean, you don't have to listen to stories for very long until you start hearing about horrendous medical debt and people who lost their retirement. It's all over the place. So it's a real fact of life. I also get puzzled by this idea that doctors are going to exodus the state. One thing that proponents and opponents agree on, if you don't pay doctors enough, they're not going to come to Colorado. Colorado Care's got to have doctors. They've got to pay. It's like you have to pay the water bill or they cut off the water. And that was in our analysis and CHI's analysis. It's not Medicaid. It's not Medicare. It's also not Canada. It's very dissimilar from Canada. That in Canada, it is true that doctor can't take somebody that's not on what Canada calls they can't see people outside of Medicaid, which is the Canadian system, and in England they're controlled. In Colorado, a provider is only subject to doing something with Colorado Care if they bill Colorado Care, and it specifically has provisions where if somebody has other insurance, the doctor can work for the other insurance, or they can take payments elsewhere. It just says if Colorado Care is paying for this treatment for this patient, then you can't charge high copays.
And how would you stop the spiral? Or how does this amendment stop the spiral?
Well, I think Ron said it very well. There's no medical bankruptcies. Copays are waived for people with financial hardships. There's no deductibles. People pay for Colorado Care in the same way they pay for Social Security and Medicare, that there's a small payroll tax. The employer pays some. The employee pays others. You know, it's a pretty popular program, Medicare and Social Security. It works. That's why we model it after that.
Ron, Medicare, what do you think of this discussion? Are you buying it?
Not really, because, like I said, I'm an insurance agent, and just talking about the doctors and that, I know for a fact 98% of all doctors accept Medicare, and 87% of them accept what's called Medicare assignment. In other words, they'll call the bill paid in full. So I don't think doctors are going to leave the state if Colorado Care is paying at least what Medicare is paying. And from what I understand, they're going to pay quite a bit more. And, I'm sorry, I don't buy that. The medical bankruptcy, I mean, I'm a financial consultant, you know, that's what I do. And I could tell you for a fact, you know, a $6,000 deductible, what happens is sometimes people are insured, and when they first get the sickness or the injury or whatever, but then because of that, they lose their job, so then they lose their coverage, and then that causes the bankruptcy in the end. And so I don't believe that. I do believe that most bankruptcies are medical bill related.
Ron, thank you for your call. We're getting short on time. We have another caller. So
thank you.
Dana from Boulder, we have you on the line. What is your comment or question for our guest? Let's go to Dana, and then I'll let you have some concluding comments. Dana, what's your comment or question?
I think people have to realize that most of us are terrified to use the healthcare system as it is. I think Colorado Care is a great act. Underinsured and not insured people can use healthcare again. You know, the costs are deferred, but they're paid. The percentage of money that insurance companies spend on care compared to what they're profiting is not acceptable. And under Colorado Care, we'll all go to the healthcare system. Plus, it'll reduce costs. I've seen how drug costs can be exorbitant. If you pay out of pocket for a drug, you pay more or a lab service than you would pay under a provider plan. That's not fair to out-of-pocket payers. So this will lower costs in general, and it'll allow people to not be afraid to use the healthcare system that are underinsured or uninsured. And that's all I have to say. I mean, you know, let's be real about this. You can't go on sponsoring corporate America.
Dana, thank you so much for your call. We have about 4.5 minutes left. So, Linda, why don't we give you maybe take 2 minutes and kind of sum up why you're opposed to this amendment and answer any last questions.
All right. First of all, I want to point out that although people say that Medicare and Social Security work well and the system is modeled after it, both of those systems are insolvent. And I think healthcare is way too important to put in the hands of an insolvent system, and that's the way Colorado Care is structured to be. In terms of cost, there's absolutely no evidence that Colorado Care will reduce costs. It may pay physicians less, or it may pay hospitals less, but what happens after that is they simply provide less service. The comment that there are physicians to spare in Canada and Germany and England, it's simply not true. All of those places are having massive physician shortages, and the way they're dealing with it is forcing people to go see less skilled practitioners. For example, in Holland, what they're doing is saying that every woman who has a baby has to go see a midwife, and many births have to be at home. Well, the result of that is that baby deaths have increased by about 100%. And this isn't good for people, but it does, in fact, lower costs. So what people have to think about with Colorado Care is that you will probably end up getting lower costs, but at the cost of very poor health care and severe diminution in quality, as is happening in Medicare and as has happened in Medicaid. And the taxes are going to drive people out.
Okay, Linda, thank you very much. Ivan or Dave, who wants to take the final comment from the pro side?
Sure. You know, ultimately, voters this fall have a decision whether to be sticking with our incredibly broken current insurance system or to make a pretty bold leap forward. And we know that any bold leap, you know, folks have a lot of questions. And, you know, we're always glad to be doing interviews like this and answering questions on our website, which I'll put in the shameless plug here. The campaign website is coloradocare.org. You can check out the personal calculators and the business calculators to see how much money you would save. You can submit any other questions you have, and Ivan or Dr. Aguilar or others respond to those on a daily basis. You know, ultimately, I think one of the other things I hope your listeners think about today is Ivan touched on the money that's going into the opposition campaign, the several million that's come direct from corporations. I actually hate wording it that way because the corporations don't magically generate this money on their own. That's money they're taking from all of our insurance premiums. And so we are literally today paying insurance companies to actively run a campaign against improving our own health insurance. And I know that certainly makes me rather angry. And I think it makes a lot of Coloradans pretty angry to find out that, you know, insurance companies say, oh, all of the money goes to care, and care is so expensive. And the reality is they're shaving off millions for this sort of corporate activity, you know, this sort of political corporate activity. You know, at the end of the day, Colorado Care is a amazing system that will save $4.5 to $5 billion a year and be able to cover everyone. And I think I'll leave it at that.
Okay, thank you. Linda Gorman from the Independence Institute, thank you so much for taking the time tonight to share your views. Ivan, and let me make sure I've got your last name right. Well, go ahead.
Miller. Ivan Miller.
Just Miller. That's an easy one.
Yeah.
And Dave Sabatos, thank you so much for being here tonight to give the pro position. I'd like to thank Jim Nelson in Boulder for doing the phones and running the board. And thank you to all the callers, some really good callers, some spirited energy, so we really appreciate that. I've been your host tonight, Jim Banks. Thanks for listening. And please stay tuned next for some really good music on Highway 322.
And that was It's the Economy. Coming up next is Highway 322, and in an hour or so, it's Ragtime America, and stay tuned for at 9 o'clock, we got to the swing shift, so stay tuned for the great musical programming coming up, and It's the Economy ends another afternoon and evening of news and public affairs. Time is 7 o'clock. This is KGNU Boulder, Denver, 88.5 FM and 1390 AM.